think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 219 of Low Limit Football on this Monday, October 8th, 2018, on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have a new head coach in MLS. Can this coach turn around the fortunes of a former MLS champion? A footballing legend has retired on the weekend. We're going to let you know who that is. The final 30 is out for the Ballon d'Or tonight. Who's in? Who are the glaring omissions? We will discuss a lot of that. Some of the big coaches in Europe are on the hot seat at some of the biggest clubs in the world. Which coach is going to be first to be sacked? And who are the potential replacements? We're going to talk about that tonight. And as we enter the international break, we have a megastar that has returned to our opening thoughts segment, and for all the wrong reasons. We're going to discuss that and much, much more with our very, very good friend, Semper Inter's Nima Tavale, who will be joining us in just a little bit. First off, let me get my man in, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you tonight, my friend?
My man, wow, that's such an honor. Now I'm doing well, but Joe, I have to ask you this.
Yeah.
Have you ever scored 4 goals in 13 minutes?
Maybe. No, I haven't.
Did you do it at 19?
No, definitely not. Maybe on a foosball table, but that's about it. And he's somebody we're going to talk about tonight. You know, I know you're referring to Kylian Mbappe. And I know we're going to touch on him a little later on in the show, because what he did on the weekend is amazing, to score 4 goals in 13 minutes. And I know there were a lot of haters, Rob, right, on the internet. Where,
oh, my God, too much.
Yeah, well, one, everyone's talking about, oh, the French league is a farmer's league. A lot of people brought up Robert Lewandowski, how he scored 5 goals in 19 minutes, right, a couple years ago.
Except the fact, I mean, no one's going to say this, but, you know, I think Lewandowski's a little bit older than Mbappe.
Yeah, of course, you know, but it's still an amazing feat no matter what. It just, for me, the one that soured me was the whole, oh, it's a farmer's league. And then there were people jumping to the French league's defense by saying, yeah, your farmer's league team beat Man City in the Champions League, you know, and think about it on the road. So, I mean, that kind of stuff just drives me crazy. And it neglects the fact that there's a lot of young talent all around the world. And Kylian Mbappe is certainly one of those shining stars where I think, Rob, you know, and I think you'll agree with me, I think if you take Kylian Mbappe, you put him in any league in the world right now, he's going to perform well.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'd take him at Juventus in a heartbeat.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And, I mean, look at the performance he gave you even in the World Cup this year, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. And so, besides, 19.
That's all you need to know. 19 years old.
He's not even in his prime. I don't even think he is there. Anything before prime? I think he's essentially in the part before your prime.
Pre-prime.
Like the not even pre-prime. Yeah. No, not even that.
Yeah.
He's still a baby at this case.
He is. I mean, think about it. If he scored those goals in this country, he couldn't drink to his success.
You know, I mean, we've seen that happen with a couple of players. You know, we talked about Christian Pulisic and a bunch of others. It's just, it's amazing, and it's, you know, maybe next week you and I will get a chance to talk about youth and talent and kind of dive a little deeper into that topic, because I think it's an interesting one.
But I think it's always good to always be well aware of the youth coming up.
Absolutely, absolutely. Whether it be coming up through Europe, coming up in South America, coming up in the United States, I think it's always worth looking at discussing, because those are the future stars, and we may not be talking about them on a day in, day out basis today, but 3, 4, 5 years from now we will be, and then you'll sit there and say to yourself, yeah, we've been talking about them all along. So what's the big deal? So, and then what'll happen is we'll get Wayne Rooney syndrome, where we'll think of Wayne Rooney as like a 46-year-old, and you're like, oh, he's 32? What do you mean he's 32? So
I think that's going to happen to Mbappe, though, isn't that? Like 10 years from now, he'll be 29, and he's hopefully going to do all this stuff. And then we're going to think to himself as an old man of achieving all these things. And then you think to yourself, wait a minute, he's only 29.
Yeah. He's going to be – well, think about the trophies he already has under his belt. Everyone's going to look at him throughout his career now and go, when is he going to win a Champions League?
Right.
That's going to be the next one for him. And
I think it's the only one.
What's that?
I think it's the only one.
Yeah, it's the only one left. I mean, he's got a World Cup. It's crazy, right? But
yep.
He does. So let's jump into it, because I know we've got Nima coming up here in about 10 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Let's get to trivia tonight, and then let's jump into opening thoughts.
So obviously the comparisons that Mbappe is going to have, you know, over the weekend we saw him with comparisons with Lionel Messi at 19 and Ronaldo at 19, but we're going to stick to the Argentine for this quick question. Over the weekend, Lionel Messi scored his 26th career goal against Valencia, putting Valencia into his top 5 victims of the most goals that he scored in La Liga. Can you name the other 4 teams with Valencia that he has scored the most goals against in La Liga?
Okay, so I've got to give you 4 more teams.
Yep.
All right, first I got to find a pen that'll write for me.
And they're all teams you should know. They're all teams, well, big teams.
Oh, sure, sure. I've got one, because that's – I got 2, and I got 3. I've got 3 right now that I think are on that list. Does that include his international goals for Argentina?
No, just in La Liga.
I just want to make sure of that. Then there's got to be one more team that I think. Okay,
You always have to look back at the games that you know when Barcelona play.
Yeah.
You remember him of him scoring. Well, I mean, that's almost every other game, but you always remember these games like, oh, he scored against them.
Right, like a ridiculous amount of games. You know, or like a ridiculous amount of goals in one game where he's done it more than once. So I've got an idea. The 4th team that I wrote down I don't like for some reason, but the other 3 I feel fairly confident in, so we'll have to see. You also want to pick a team, Rob, that has been in La Liga as long as he has, right?
Yep. If my memory serves me correctly... Yep, none of these teams have been relegated.
Okay, so that's going to be another one that's going to be a basis for my thought process for answering this question. So we'll see what happens. Let's get to opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And this is something that has been on everybody's mind at least for the past week. I got interviewed on CTV News in Canada again this week about this, and it's something that is just it's amazing that we're even discussing it. And it's the rape allegations against Cristiano Ronaldo in a Las Vegas hotel room stemming back to a 2009 trip to Las Vegas for CR7. We have a woman by the name of Catherine Mayorga who supposedly, and according to all the video evidence that we've seen on internet and everything else, met Cristiano at a nightclub at the Palms in Las Vegas sometime in 2009. And then I guess they both returned to Ronaldo's hotel room where supposedly either consensual sex or non-consensual sex or something happened. However, what had happened after the fact is that this woman was she did go to police. She did file a complaint. She did not name the person in the complaint. She did not name the location of where this quote-unquote crime happened in her complaint. Since then, Cristiano Ronaldo's quote-unquote handlers, lawyers, approached Ms. Mayorga They offered her, I want to say it was $375,000 as hush money. She accepted it with a non-disclosure agreement, and the rest is history. Until about a little over a month ago, where she, according to reports, she felt empowered by the Me Too movement that everybody else, that everybody in the world should be familiar with at this point. And filed a complaint, asked the Las Vegas Police Department to reopen the investigation. They have subsequently reopened this investigation. And this has now come into the limelight with news agencies around the world. And how it's been covered is something we're going to talk about with Nima in a few minutes. But that's the gist of the background of the story. Now, a couple of things. Juventus, his current club, which actually, believe it or not, Rob, in 2009, this was not his club. This wasn't even his previous club. He was on the on his move from Manchester United to Real Madrid.
That's right, during the summer.
Exactly, during this time. So he was in transition. But Juventus, who is his current club, in really what can only be described as a bizarre statement, stood behind Cristiano Ronaldo, which you would expect that to happen. But the way they did it was they don't change their opinion, or they don't change their support of someone based on the actions of 10 years ago. And I'm paraphrasing what was said. It was just an awful way to come out and support Cristiano Ronaldo. For me, if I was the head at Juventus, and people said, how did this one pass, you know, muster when they went to release it? For me, I would have said, you know, we understand these allegations. We support Cristiano Ronaldo. Hope that the truth comes to light, and all parties are, you know, treated fairly and properly, right? Something along those lines, not along the lines of, yeah, hey, we don't, you know, whatever it is, we still are not going to change our opinion of him. Man, that's just, it sets a bad precedence to me. Cristiano Ronaldo has come out on social media, denied the allegations, one, as you would expect. But this is just a sticky situation, Rob, and I don't know if this will maintain its legs, you know, over the next few weeks, or if this will get swept under the rug by either Las Vegas PD or Mayorga or lawyers or anybody else. But you just wonder how this is going to turn out. I mean, you've been following this closely, Rob. I'd like your two cents on this particular situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, first of all, I'll say the actual statement that Juventus said, and I want your thoughts on it as well, specifically. And within the two tweets that Juventus had posted on October 4th, it said, and I quote, "Cristiano Ronaldo has shown in recent months his great professionalism and dedication, which is appreciated by everyone at Juventus. The events allegedly dating back to almost 10 years ago do not change this opinion, which is shared by anyone who has come into contact with this great champion."
Right, and it boggles the mind. I mean, like I said, it doesn't feel appropriate. You know what I mean?
Yes. No, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't poo-poo the fact that Juve stands behind Ronaldo. I don't. I would expect Juventus to stand behind him. I kind of like the way Federico Bernardeschi handled the whole situation. He came out with a tweet, I think, the day before Juventus came out, and basically gave his support to Cristiano Ronaldo, the person, and what Ronaldo has brought to the team and brought to his professional development. I thought that was a good way for individuals to handle it. But I just, yeah, it boggles the mind. I mean, where do you stand on the whole thing, Rob?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you basically hit it on the nail with everything. I mean, obviously it was a bad taste for Juventus as, you know, as a PR team in this sense to really demonstrate the support for Cristiano Ronaldo, perhaps not in the way that it should have been. You know, you've seen directors and other people involved at Juventus, you know, come out and express it differently, you know, stating their support, but not in the sense that, you know, it feels awkward. But, you know, this is a weird situation. Obviously, we're not going to go into too much of a big detail because, you know, it's a bit inappropriate for our sense. Mm-hmm. But I think now this is a really sticky situation that is not going away anytime soon. Many people thought that this was just something that was going to be brushed out, you know, something that would have easily been forgotten within the next few days. But no, it just, information keeps coming out. People are speaking up. You know, there was even criticism as to why the bigger media outlets are not reporting this, you know, in sports media at least. And it's just weird. I mean, this is a really interesting situation that's happening to Ronaldo, you know, that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. the whole case now, and obviously we're not, you know, we are not, we're just radio hosts. We have no expertise, at least from a legal standpoint, how this all stands. But I think now, I mean, you have to look at Ronaldo facing perhaps charges and perhaps being sued by the, I forgot her name, I'm sorry, Catherine, what's her last name, sorry?
Mayorga.
Who actually, if I remember, I was looking at this a couple of days ago, that a second unnamed accuser came out that Catherine Mayorga spoke about. So this is something that is really interesting that I think is going to hurt Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, you know, you don't know where you stand. I mean, yeah, we don't know what happened. That's the bad thing about it. We don't know what happened, but I think it doesn't matter if you're, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, or any of that. You know, if this does come true, you know, what a terrible situation it would be for a player like him. And it's sad, too, given the fact that, you know, he has this kind of personality to be, you know, one of the best players in the world. And, you know, I think that he has to be held accountable if this does indeed happen. That's the bad thing about it. But again, and this is literally everything that we're saying here. We don't know what's going to happen. We can only hear from what Catherine had to say, obviously the lawyers, and obviously from Ronaldo himself. But we just really don't know what could happen. And I'm curious to see what Nima thinks about this too, because he certainly was in the middle of this whole debate, especially from an ethics standpoint of how the story should have been reported and that kind of thing. Joe, I don't know if you remember that whole kind of discussion that you saw on Twitter.
I do, and actually, you know, as soon as I can get Nima added into the call here, I'm trying to add him in now. That was kind of the first question that I had for him was, you know, the reporting, because you know there are libel laws and things like that that apparently are different in Europe and also dependent on actually I'm just taking a look up. Actually, let me just I'm gonna, Rob, if you're there right now, I'm gonna go ahead. I know Nima's not ready. He's gonna he's just gonna be a couple of minutes to go before he comes on. But you know, the libel laws in Europe and especially, you know, country by country are very different from the libel laws here in the United States. So there's a little more freedom of press in the United States than there is in Europe, but this is something I want to talk about. And I want to make sure, because I believe he's online. Nima, do I have you?
Yes, you do. Sorry. No, sorry about that, guys.
I apologize.
I had some trouble
with
my internet. Yeah, sorry, it was not working, wasn't connecting. Sorry about that.
If you need a minute, let me know. I'm happy to, you know, to have you do whatever you need to do.
No, it was okay. It was just I was struggling with the internet, but it's okay now. It's all fixed.
Oh, perfect.
Well, I'm sorry about being late. No,
you're not late at all. And actually, before I turn over the Cristiano Ronaldo talk to you, I have one question for you on a personal level that I've been thinking about. You're of Iranian descent, right?
Yes.
You live in Sweden.
Yes.
You cover Italian football.
Yes.
And we're speaking English. How many languages do you speak, my friend?
Swedish, English, Italian, Persian, a little bit of Norwegian.
That's five.
And German, yeah, a little bit of German.
That's six.
You know, that's very basic. That qualifies you to be Pope. You know that.
or work at the UN.
Either way.
No, God. No, I just lack the patience for that.
So I wanna, you know, I couldn't think of a better person to have on tonight than you on this, because also not only do you speak six languages, you also have a law degree.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so this is you. There's nobody on the planet I think that is better to speak to about this than you.
Thanks, guys.
I want to look at this from a legal standpoint. I know that you had gotten into it with Miguel Delaney, Zach Lowy. There was a wonderful debate that I watched on Twitter about the reporting of this particular story and the legalities of reporting it. So I just wanted your two cents on all of that, because I think it's intriguing, especially compared to the United States here, where you can pretty much say whatever you want whenever you want.
Well, exactly. I mean, you're not allowed to defame or libel people in the U.S. either, but you're allowed to. I mean, it's different in the U.K. because they don't have a codified constitution. Many critics in the legal community, I remember the very first lecture we had on constitutional law, our lecturer said, I think you'll all be happy to know that you're in a country that doesn't have a constitution. And that's kind of true, because they don't really have a constitution, or at least they don't have a codified constitution, because they've never had a revolution or anything like upheaval like that, to begin with, just to give you like a crash course background here. Basically, the situation is this, that in the UK, you can get sued for libel if you publish something that turns out not to be true. That's basically how it is everywhere. In the US, however, you're more protected due to the amendment, the free speech amendments in the Constitution. In the UK, you're not. What he was, you know, what I was arguing was that, okay, Der Spiegel, you know, this isn't the National Enquirer that came out with some bullshit, okay? This was a serious journalistic organization that made some serious, you know, findings. And I understand why people didn't report it back in 2017, because it wasn't as hard, you know, the research and the story wasn't as, rooted as this was. And I understand that they didn't want to, they had to wait and they had to consult their legal teams because they didn't want to, because I mean, we're talking about Cristiano Ronaldo. It's one of the biggest, he's one of the biggest sports stars in the world. He's one of the biggest brands in the world. These people have the financial muscles to hurt you. I can understand the why they were pausing it. We're pausing to report it. But after Cristiano Ronaldo went out on his Instagram story and denied it, there is absolutely 110% zero legal issues or legal liability. Like legal, you're not sensitive to being sued at all after he comes out and talks about it, because then he's talked about it. And the way they could have, I mean, in that sense, if you want to, you can also, you know, what I was saying against Miguel Delaney was simply this, that, okay, before that, you know, you can argue it both ways. That's fair enough. You know, fine. But after he went out with it, there is absolutely nothing preventing you from doing, you know, from covering this story full on. And there's also nothing preventing you from putting it on the front page and running it with the lead story. They didn't, because they were scared. And that's fine. You know, a lot, I can understand that hesitation and that reluctance. But don't give me that bullshit about how running a story as a lead story would leave you open to being sued, because that's just ridiculous. Either you report a story or you don't. The law doesn't care if you run it as a front page story or if you put it on page five. That's just ridiculous. That was kind of what I was saying. And as always, anyone who's ever had the great displeasure and been unfortunate enough to interact with that douchebag knows that he likes to talk down to everyone and everything under the sun. And the way he talked. And the way he talked to Zach was just absolutely disgusting. So what? Just Zach is a student, but he's created something on his own, whereas this guy hasn't. All he does is goes around and talks people, you know, talks down to people. And I think that's really rude, and I found it really disgusting. And so I called him out on it, and he started talking about personal issues, and it turned into a complete shit show. And I'm not interested in that. I mean, I don't want to talk about the issues here. And the issue was that this wasn't covered the way I think it should have been covered. And that's something that his own newspaper admitted, his colleague, whose name eludes me right now, wrote a column about it stating this fact. I think the title of the piece was why the Cristiano Ronaldo story is not the leading story worldwide. And it's embarrassing for someone to, on the one hand, one day talk down to people for criticizing what his own paper then did. And then he goes on and says, well, you know, the story's changed. No, it didn't. It really didn't. It was just, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo spoke about it already. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. They just waited. And that's fine. You know, every publication, everyone has the right to make their own editorial decisions and legal considerations when they're talking to their legal teams. That's fair enough. I don't, you know, that's okay. But don't, at least be honest about it. You know, like don't talk that you can get, that there was a bigger chance of getting sued if you run the story on the front page of the paper. That's just ridiculous. That's ignorant. That's stupid.
And also, what was stupid, I think, now, and you know, shifting gears to now from a more professional standpoint, no disrespect to Miguel, obviously, but obviously talking about the statement that Juventus had put out following the recent news of the Cristiano Ronaldo case, obviously, you know, showed his support, but didn't show his support in the way that it would have been, or at least not in the sense that it would have been formatted. Nima, I mean, obviously, I want your reaction to all this. And, you know, if you were a part of Juventus' legal team and, you know, you had to, you know, put out a statement, be it a tweet or something involving involving PR, you know, what would you think, what would you have said in this situation?
I would, what I wouldn't have said is bring up his dedication and professionalism as an athlete in relation to rape charges. That's what I would definitely wouldn't have done, because it's completely irrelevant to the to that at all. I mean, they just scored a massive own goal when they said that, because again, whether or not you're good at your job has absolutely zero bearing on whether or not you committed a crime or not. I mean, I don't understand that logic at all. I understand that they were under pressure. I understand that they wanted to say something to back up their star man. And they were probably, you know, this is just me speculating, they were probably under a lot of pressure from Ronaldo's team to support their star man. And that, you know, that's fair enough. But what they put out was disgraceful. It was tone deaf. And it just did not belong in the 21st century. That's something you'd expect from the 1930s or 1850s, but not this is. That's not something you'd expect from a world brand, world sports brand in the 21st century. Absolutely not.
No, I agree 100%. But now, looking at this case as a whole, obviously, you know, you did mention your experience as a, you know, having a law degree. I just want your sense of this moment, you know, of this entire situation. You know, how do you feel it will stand about, you know, maybe in favor of Ronaldo, maybe in front of the accuser or accusers in this sense now, as we're reporting? You know, I just want your sense of all this happening. And, you know, given the fact that we've seen the whole Me Too movement from a lot of different people, various examples include Ellie Raisman, you know, of the U.S. gymnastics team, you know, you obviously see the history of Harvey Weinstein in that sense. I mean, you know, where do you stand, especially for a situation that, you know, hasn't really happened, well, I wouldn't say hasn't, but, you know, rarely happens to these big international, you know, superstars and one of the most recognizable human beings, I guess, on this earth.
Yeah, no, you are. And like, as I've said this so many times on Twitter, so I really want to make myself clear. I'm not making any judgment whether or not he is guilty legally of rape or not. No, but I don't know that. You don't know that. Most people don't know that. We have to let the law, you know, everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty. And that's how it should be. You know, so let's not conflate these two issues here. I think the way it's been covered has been a little bit of a, you know, disgrace, and the way Juventus handled it has been completely disgraceful. Those two things are completely separate from whether or not he's guilty or not. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, I agree 100%. I mean, that's certainly something that a lot of people need to understand, that, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty and that kind of thing. But it's going to be a really interesting case because, you know, this has been something that, you know, we haven't seen in, you know, ever in the sense of a major superstar being involved in this case. But, you know, it has to go down as, you know, something that has to be settled, and hopefully we can get the right information from the people that we can trust in the sense of the law for this kind of thing. Joe, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just have a real quick question for you, Nima. I agree with you 100%. And too often in social media world these days, we go to guilty until proven innocent instead of innocent until proven guilty, which is the way the law reads. My question for you, though, is the way this is quote-unquote underreported worldwide, really, if you think about it, because even in the United States, it hasn't hit the mainstream media, which is something, this is, like Rob said, this is one of the biggest athletes and one of the biggest, you know, recognizable faces on the planet. And it really hasn't hit the way you would think a scandal like this would have hit the mainstream media. So my question to you is, does this just go away eventually, where we don't hear anything about it because there is no real pressure from large media sources being placed on Ronaldo and on the investigation and on the police department and on Miss Mayorga? Does this just all of a sudden just go away into the ether of the universe?
No, there's no way this is going away. There's a second woman now. I think her lawyer, Mr. Mayorga's lawyer, said that he's been contacted by a second woman who's now talking about that he raped her too. Look, this isn't going away. And if you and anyone who's read that, who read the Der Spiegel account with all the details and all the documents they released, this is not going away. The police department in Las Vegas have also reopened the case again. And given the fact that she underwent that she had a rape kit done on her, then the statute of limitations doesn't apply. because once, apparently, according to, from what I've understood, Nevada law, it's like if you have a rape kit and you make a complaint, even if you take it back within a, within 5 years of the incident, then there's no statute of limitations. And this is, so this isn't going away. And the way she seems hell-bent, I mean, she's quit her job. She's in hiding, staying away from social media and the press. She's going to take this all the way. And it doesn't seem, from based on what she said, this is anything to do with money. This is to do with that she wants him to be responsible for what he did. I think that's what this is about. I think she feels wronged. She's in that place now where she wants justice. That's the way I read it. Now, whether or not they manage to, you know, what this leads to in the end is, you know, as I said, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. He hasn't been charged, let alone being convicted. Mm-hmm. So I think we got to, you know, we all got to back off a little bit.
Yeah, slow down.
That's yeah. But when it comes to the coverage, I mean, my issue is not, you know, as I said, my issue with the coverage was the fact that when the story was when they ran the story, they put it like on page 5 and 6 instead of as a front story, like a front page cover story, which it should have been. And I can, you know, I understand that these things are, you know, are sensitive, but, you know, and you want to consult your legal team, especially when you're talking to one of the most powerful men in the sporting world. Jorge Mendes, who is the manager of Ronaldo and who runs everything around him. I mean, I can completely understand that. But once the cat was out of the bag, they should have ran with it. Now it's like they're playing catch up, and that's fine. And I want to be clear. I'm not just talking about his newspaper here. I made that absolutely clear when we were discussing on Twitter. I was talking about the mainstream media generally and how this has been covered. I think, for example, I mean, in America, Good Morning. I mean, this was all over the news. This was on Good Morning America. This was, you know, that's how this should have been covered, because he's a huge star. And there's no reason for them not to talk about it. And it should be talked about, because, I mean, this is the 21st century. We need to air out the closets. We need to air out the cupboards. This, you know, the issue of sexual harassment and sexual assault is something women have to deal with on a daily basis and have been for, well, since the dawn of man. And this has got to stop, you know, and the only way it can be stopped is if we talk about it. I'm not saying we should, lynch mobs and stuff like that. I'm saying we need to talk about it. And in order to talk about it, you can't just bury the stories. You have to talk out loudly, even though it might be uncomfortable to talk about.
No, definitely. I agree 100%. But now let's talk about something more, I guess, positive in the sense. And obviously, I think one of the big news over the weekend, not just about the Ronaldo case, but certainly of a young French 19-year-old who scored 4 goals over Lyon over this weekend. And, you know, Joe and I were having this good debate a couple days ago, or at least when it happened, about the whole thing of how Kylian Mbappe has achieved so many things at such a young career. I believe he has like 65 goals and he's only 19. That's ridiculous. He doesn't even turn 20 until December 20th. I mean, Nima, at this sense, I mean, for a player like Kylian Mbappe, I mean, and certainly this would be something you would have to go back from years ago and in your memory. I mean, certainly there hasn't been a kid at his age, or at least a player at his age at 19, that's doing the stuff that Kylian Mbappe is at the moment. I mean, what are your thoughts on his, you know, meteoric rise, I guess, and, you know, there is no ceiling for him, isn't it, Nima?
No, I love that. I think this kid is like, it's one of those things that watching Kylian Mbappe play is it just puts a smile on my face. You know, he's so talented and he's got so much energy, and it just reminds me of why I once fell in love with the sport to begin with. I think this guy's the future for this kid. He hasn't nowhere near peaked yet, and it will be so interesting to see where his career goes. But he's one of those few players who actually I really enjoy watching. It puts a smile on my face. Like Paulo Dybala is one of those players who I actually enjoy watching play. Iniesta was one of those players. Mbappe is also one of those kids.
You know what the difference is, Nima, and I think I can pinpoint this, because I would also add Ronaldinho to your list.
It's
the fact Ronaldo, the original Ronaldo, too.
But these guys...
Absolutely.
They look like they're having fun. You know, it's not a job to them. They just really look like they're enjoying themselves. And Kylian Mbappe is one of those, it seems like every time he's dribbling the ball or he's scoring goals, there's just a big smile on his face. And it reminds me a little of Ronaldinho in kind of his body language and his attitude. And I think that's what makes watching players like that so much more enjoyable, is just the joy they feel from playing the game, don't you think?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's these, I'm so glad you mentioned Ronaldinho as well, because that was also this kind of, this is what the sport is about. It's about joy. It's about, you know, you become happy when you become so inspired almost. And that's Mbappe. He really does that to me. It's like just watching him move on the pitch, you know, and I don't know. It's just, I don't even know if his best position is a striker or a left winger or as a number 10. I mean, he can do all three. I mean, he's still young and he's got a long way to go. Hopefully, you know, knock on wood, no injuries destroying his career. How good can this guy be? God knows. I mean, the sky's the limit for this one. And he seems like he's got a good head on his shoulder. I mean, the last talent, to be honest with you, the last time I saw a talent that was like this was a certain Mario Balotelli. But what is that saying you guys got in baseball? Like $1 million arm, but a nickel for a head. I mean, that was his, that was Balotelli. This guy seems to have a really solid head on his shoulders as well, and I think that'll do him a world of good in his career.
No doubt about it. So before I let you go, I do want to jump into one more topic quickly, and I want to jump into Champions League with you. And more specifically, the play of the Italian sides in Europe last week, because it was nothing short of incredible. The only blemish on the Italian sides in all of Europe was Lazio's loss on Thursday in the Europa League. But otherwise, they went 5-for-5, 5 victories in 5 matches. And they've all moved, all those teams have moved themselves into position at the moment, although it's early, to qualify to go through to knockout stages. Is this a testament to the fact that Italian football, and we've kind of been talking about this now for six to nine months, Italian football is on its way back, maybe even to the level of early 2000s, late 90s, when we saw the dominant Inter and dominant AC Milan sides. Is this just another trend in that direction, or you think that this is going to be something that might be short-lived?
No, I think this is definitely a trend, because the Italian teams are looking. I mean, look at Juventus. They signed the best player in the world last year, you know, this summer. Look at the signings Inter have made. Look at, you know, this is definitely a trend. Italian football is really coming back, and it's already here. And I think there's definitely going to, you know, the Italian teams are much more competitive. Roma knocking out Barcelona last season, going to the semifinal. I don't think that was a fluke. I think that's something that Roma have been working up to. Napoli, they've obviously always focused with Sarri. They always focused more on the league. I think with now they have one of the best coaches in the world, one of the top three coaches in the world, in my opinion, who is a master at you know, rotation, squad rotation, and getting his players to perform in several different competitions, and that his career as a coach attests to that. So no, I definitely don't think this is a trend. I definitely don't think this is just one of those short-lived things. I think this is a trend. Italian football is back, and it won't be long before we'll see. I think the distance between Spain, the Spanish, English, and Italian teams to the others will grow, barring PSG maybe, but that's a special case. But other than that, I mean I don't think we'll see. It'll be like the 90s ever again, where one country completely dominates like that. I think it'll be on a year by year basis. But if you look at it, I think those three countries, the top four teams from Spain, England, and Italy, are taking off now. They're putting some distance between themselves and the others, and I think we're just going to see more of that.
Nemo, I just want to jump in real quick. Sorry, guys, I just want to jump in real quick. And you know, saying that and seeing the resurgence of Serie A as a whole, I just want your quick opinion on this, Nemo. Where would you rank Serie A at the moment as one of the top five leagues? Where would you put them among those top five?
I think La Liga is number one, simply in terms of quality. I think Premier League is two, and I think Serie A is third. I think that's the way I look at it. Then the Bundesliga fourth. Okay. That's where I will put it. I don't think there's that much of a gap between the top three, like the difference between those three. But I would still say that, based on the results that you've seen these past 5 years or even past year, I'd still think that the La Liga is a little, you know, still has that edge over the Premier League and the Serie A.
And I think, you know, and I just want to just jump on that a little bit, because if you look at it, to have three you know, very close leagues, not one being dominant than the other, and the differences in the style of play in each league. Don't you think that that is better for the general football fan who can go now and maybe start to appreciate the differences? Because, you know, when you're spreading it out over, we're really talking about 60 teams, Nima, right? When we talk about the three leagues, we're talking about 60 teams. And I know we've got PSG, we've got Borussia Dortmund, we've got Bayern Munich. We Lyon is playing very well, Marseille is playing very well. We've got other teams we can talk about, but you talk about, you know, 60 teams that you can tune into on a day in, day out basis and see that. Isn't that a huge benefit for the up and coming football fan who's trying to look at leagues, trying to look at teams, trying to watch games, but not necessarily become EPL-centric or La Liga-centric because there's quality throughout?
Yeah. No, that's pretty interesting. I haven't really looked at it like that before. I haven't thought about it like that. But yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, the world of football is so, I mean, especially the elite is so, I mean, world football is so globalized now, and it truly is a global game. And this means that the talent pool has also grown. I mean, we see world-class players now from so many different countries. And that's really interesting. That makes it also more of a global game, because obviously if you have, for example, the US, if Christian Pulisic turns out to be a superstar, then it's only natural that the interest for soccer, as you guys call it, will become bigger in your country. I mean, that's just how it works. When people have players and stars they can relate to, then that helps the sport grow in that particular area. And I think the fact that you have the Champions League, where, I mean, four teams from Germany and four teams from Italy, Spain, etc., that creates also, that makes it also much more interesting for investors and the football capitalists, if you want, to get involved. And that also makes, makes the difference between maybe, as you said, the top 20 teams or top 10 or 20, 15 teams in the world, in Europe, that they grow, outgrow the teams under them. Whilst, I mean, I remember back in the 90s, I was actually talking to a friend about this today. I mean, back in the 90s when the Champions League was new, my home team, IFK Gothenburg, were, these guys... they back in 93, 94, for the 94 World Cup in the USA, they had 13 Swedish national team players, and that's the team that finished third. And this was a team where they worked half-time whilst, half-time they trained professionally and half-time they had other jobs on the side, and they beat Barcelona, Milan, Manchester United. Those stories, I think, are a thing of the past now, or I'm pretty sure about that. That these kind of, these sunshine stories and, the underdog. The underdogs nowadays, they're millionaires, the players there as well. It's just that these giant clubs, as Mourinho called the three or four of them, the difference between them and the big clubs is growing. I think you're having a concentration of power between to the top 10, top 15, and then you have a gap down to the bottom, to the next 20.
Mm-hmm. Right. Nima, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us, especially to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo and everything else. Always been a great friend of the show, and we love having you on, and I'm sure we'll have you back very, very soon.
It's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure, and you guys do an excellent job. I love your show. I always listen, so keep up the good work.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night.
You betcha. Good night.
Nima Tavale from SemperInter.com. I love talking with him. So let's jump into our other topics, Rob, because I know we've got a few minutes here, so I want to just make sure we get on it real quick. The first one I want to talk about is obviously the coaching carousel, right? You and I have said a million times on this show that we live in a what have you done for me lately world, especially when it comes to coaching. And we've got three coaches at three of the absolute biggest clubs in the world right now, and all three are on the hot seat. We're talking about Jose Mourinho over at Manchester United, Julian Lopetegui, the new coach at Real Madrid, and Niko Kovac over at Bayern Munich. All three teams mired in this funk of mediocrity. When you even look at Lopetegui, Real Madrid hasn't scored a goal in four games, which is unheard of in Real Madrid, history. So it is an amazing point that all three of these teams, and actually pretty decent coaches. I mean, Mourinho is one of the giants. At where they're at in this moment, I'm going to ask you a couple questions real quick, Rob. One, do we see all three of them sacked before the end of the year? And two, which do you feel is going to be sacked first? And before you answer, I'm going to throw my answer in and give you that. I think it's going to be Julian Lopetegui. I think that the top brass at Real Madrid will have a much quicker trigger finger. And although the reports were that Mourinho was going to be gone by the weekend, he's still there. It's Monday night, and I really am starting to feel like it's going to be Lopetegui first before Mourinho. I'd like your thoughts on both answers.
Well, let me ask you this. Which one of these three clubs do you think is more cutthroat?
Real Madrid.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's your answer.
Yeah. That's why I said Lopetegui first, because you know, he could blink wrong and they would sack him. So
the worst thing you could do as a Real Madrid coach is have to always worry about Florentino Perez. Actually, you know what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. We know what's going to happen. I think this is how it's going to go through, because I don't think any of these three have received the ungrateful support from their club yet, have they?
The death pat on the back of the full support of the club. I don't think
whoever gets that first, if they get it, will be the first one sacked. Mm-hmm. If Real Madrid put out a statement, what they usually do, stating their unwavering support to Julian Lopetegui, he's finished.
He should pack his bags. Yeah.
Yep, just start packing.
But I mean, you know, who do you think is going to get sacked first yourself? Do you feel it's going to be Lopetegui?
I think so. I think, you know, if you don't score a goal in that many, what is it now, 6 hours or something? I was looking at it like on the website. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
And you look at the attacking power that they have too. I mean, let me ask you this, Joe. Mm-hmm. Did they miss Ronaldo that much?
You know, this is the one thing we forget when we talk about it in those terms. It wasn't just Ronaldo that was part of Real Madrid. It was also Zinedine Zidane. I mean, we've got to remember that. This is not somebody that, you know, it wasn't just any old coach that was there. You've got to remember, Zidane won, what, 3 straight Champions Leagues?
That's right.
Now, granted, he didn't win La Liga, right?
Nope. Yes, he did.
The first year, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but in the last 2 years, he still had Cristiano Ronaldo, he still had Gareth Bale, he still had Benzema, he still had Sergio Ramos, and Keylor Navas was playing like Keylor Navas has played for Real Madrid. He still had all those pieces, and he still was not able to win La Liga. So, you know, it's not like when Zidane was there, he was winning trebles, okay? Because it's not the case. However, he was winning Champions Leagues, and now you start to worry about, you know, when they're not scoring goals and the only piece that's missing is Cristiano Ronaldo, you've got to start looking at the team and going, okay, what is going on tactically that is so different from Zidane that they're not even scoring? Because the talent is there. You know, Asensio, Isco, Benzema, Bale, Modric, Cruz. I mean, come on. Seriously. You know, even Sergio Ramos is good for a corner kick goal off his head, right?
Yep.
And we don't even have that right now. So you've got to start looking at the team tactically and saying, you know, what is Lopetegui doing different from Zidane and what needs to be fixed? And if you're Florentino Perez, I think you've got to give Lopetegui a chance to fix it, right?
Yes, 100%.
But I think the leash is very short.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. 100%.
So, now, what do you want to talk about next, Rob?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the other big news that happened in terms of coaches is the Matias Almeida news. I mean, this is certainly a surprise for both of us because we both know how great Matias Almeida is. And we've seen that with Chivas, but now, this was confirmed, I believe, this morning, the announcement made that San Jose Earthquakes will get Matias Almeida as their new coach. I mean, Joe, this is a really, you know, this is out of right field, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, but, you know, you look at Almeida as a head coach. He's won Liga MX. He's won the CONCACAF Champions League. And he won the CONCACAF Champions League eliminating, I'm trying to remember these teams all off the top of my head, Toronto.
Seattle, in the final.
Seattle Sounders. And I want to say the New York Red Bull.
That is correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, so he eliminated Toronto, who was the defending MLS champion. He defeated Seattle Sounders, who were second place in the prior year. They were the defending champions. Yep. And the New York Red Bull, who I want to say won the Supporters' Shield 3 years ago, if I remember
yes,
correctly.
Yes, or 2 years ago, one of those times. Yep, yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So, I mean, these are not chump clubs that he did this with. And he also did it with Chivas, who is one, you know, in terms of ownership, one of the most, I mean, he's Roman Abramovich dysfunctional, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So to be able to do that with limitations, and in fact, he left Chivas, my understanding is he left Chivas because they weren't giving him the players that he needed or that he wanted to continue winning. So if they weren't going to support him, then he was out, which I think is very brave of a coach, but it also shows his integrity and also his ability. I think this is a great thing, and I want to say, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Nate Albarea who tweeted that, or it might have even been you, Rob, now that I'm thinking about it. You really open up now with a guy like Almeida coming, you start to open up things to South America coming in.
It was Luis Miguel.
That's right. But you open it up to now those South American players who are now looking at Atlanta United and coming, and we know what that's done. You know, Ezequiel Barco's come over. Miguel Almiron is here. Joseph Martinez is here. These guys are all killing it at Atlanta United all the way to the first, you know, to the supporters shield basically at this point in MLS. Mm-hmm. So I think this opens up huge doors for a previous champion in Seattle. In San Jose Earthquakes that might allow them to return to prominence because they're going to start signing these young talented kids out of South America. I mean, what are your thoughts?
No, I think this is a great move, not just for San Jose, but I think for MLS as a whole. I think we saw a tweet, I think it was from Juan Arango, how we wanted more Almeidas and Martinos and less Arena, Schmitz, and American coaches, which, you know, to an extent, I think for the last part, it's kind of harsh. I still think that we do need some American coaches, at least the good ones. But for a manager like Almeida, who you have to remember, no experience in U.S. soccer, never played in the United States, played in Argentina, played in Italy, obviously managed River Plate, a big club, and that extends, you know, Guadalajara, Chivas, and won titles there. I think this is a wonderful move for San Jose, and I think they couldn't have picked a better person. Because I think for me at this moment, I'm going to say it right now, Joe, and I want you to hopefully agree with me on this one. I think right now, Matias Almeida is the best club coach in the entire CONCACAF region.
Ooh, in CONCACAF.
Yes. Counting USA, Mexico, that kind of thing.
Boy, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to say he is the best coach in the entire region.
At this moment, now it's him. Then I would put probably Tata Martino and then Miguel Herrera America.
I was thinking also Tuca Ferretti at Chivas. I mean, not at Chivas, Adam. At
Tigres.
Yeah, those.
But I think with the titles that he's won, I think you would make the argument for Almeida.
Oh, he's in the discussion. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. It's got to be, you know, when you look at the entire continent, Rob, you know, excluding national team coaches, he's got to be, I would say even then, just the guy, his name is escaping me now. It just went out of my brain at River Plate. Marcelo Gallardo, yeah. So, I mean, he's another one that I think you start to get to those levels. And I think he is.
In Latin America, at least, that sense.
He's approaching that level. I think he's in that discussion. The question is how long can you hang on to Almeida before he decides that he's going to leave?
Right.
And you know, maybe he gets a call at a Porto, or he gets a call at like a Lyon or something like
that. Mexico. Yeah, or maybe.
At this point, I think he probably is looking into bigger places in Europe.
Right.
I think so.
Definitely.
Especially if he's successful. Could you imagine he returns an MLS title to San Jose?
You know, it definitely opens some doors.
I think it would. I think it truly would. So we'll have to see what happens there. Let's go on to something else a little more legendary, and that's I want to talk about John Terry real quick. John Terry on the weekend announces his retirement from football. Captain of the English national team, captain of Chelsea, 23-year career, Rob. He's won, I believe it's 5 EPL titles. I'm looking for his list of accomplishments here, which I thought I had here a moment ago. But I want to say it was 5 EPL titles. He's won a Champions League. He's won a Europa League. He's won the FA Cup. You know, where does John Terry rank for you on defenders in the world? I mean, certainly, arguably one of the top 5, especially in his time and in the prime of his career, one of the top defenders all time in his prime. No,
I think he has to go down as one of the greatest English defenders of all time. You know, you would have to, at least in his generation, you're looking at the likes of Gary Neville, Rio Ferdinand. You know, going back to his name escapes me. Jamie Carragher. You know, Ashley Cole, yeah. I mean, certainly he has to go down as one of the greats. I mean, certainly given the fact that he's been – I was actually looking at a few information about him. He was actually on the FIFA World 11 for five consecutive seasons between 2005 and 2009. So certainly he has to go down as one of the greatest center defenders of his generation. You know, obviously five league titles, four FA Cups, three League Cups, UEFA Champions League, UEFA Europa League, you know. Certainly has to go down as maybe Chelsea's greatest ever player. And, you know, that's the thing. I think he's just been really successful and, you know, happy retirement to him. I think he's achieved much more than he would have at his career. But certainly he has to go down as one of the greatest players to play in the Premier League, one of the greatest defenders in Premier League history. Not just players, but defenders as well. I think he has to go down as, you know, one of those legends.
Five Premier League titles, five FA Cups, Champions League title, five League Cups, a Europa League, and more than 700 appearances at Chelsea. Certainly will go down as one of the legendary center backs in world football, no doubt about it. So let's jump to our last topic of the night, Rob, and we'll talk about legendary people. The Ballon d'Or finalists, the final 30 were announced today. For me, I believe the list includes like 16 Spanish League team players, 14 English Premier League, I'm sorry, 11 Premier League team players. It's really heavy in those regards. There are three players from PSG, technically two from Juventus, but one is Mario Mandzukic. The other one is Cristiano Ronaldo, who last year was at Real Madrid, so he kind of counts as a two-way player there.
Yep.
You know, especially given what we just talked about with Nima, are you surprised that this is so England Spain heavy on this list? And who's missing?
Who's missing? Well, I'll read you some of the names that are on this list in order. Sergio Aguero, Alisson Becker, Gareth Bale, Karim Benzema, Edson Cavani, Thibaut Courtois, Cristiano Ronaldo, Kevin De Bruyne, Roberto Firmino, Diego Godin, Antoine Griezmann, Eden Hazard, Isco, Harry Kane, N'Golo Kante, Hugo Lloris, Mario Mandzukic, Sadio Mane, Marcelo, Kylian Mbappe, Lionel Messi, Luka Modric, Neymar, John Oblak, Paul Pogba, Ivan Rakitic, Sergio Ramos, Mo Salah, Luis Suarez, Rafael Varane. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely see some names missing. I think one of the few names that we were mentioning in our chat was Robert Lewandowski. You know, I think the top goal scorer in the Bundesliga deserves a mention in that sense. You know, there also isn't the case for David De Gea, you know, one of the best goalkeepers in the world. There's some name missing on this one. But I think this year it certainly has to be much influenced because of the World Cup. That's why you see a lot of Croatian players there, a lot of French players there as well, Belgian players as well. So, yeah, I think that's the influence there. But certainly, you're actually hard-pressed for a winner now, don't you think, Joe? Because, you know, you look at this case of Luka Modric winning the best award and winning the UEFA Best Player in Europe award. But I think, of course, it is a popularity contest, unfortunately, in the end. But maybe it gets skewed to Modric's way. Who knows? What do you think, Joe?
It very well could be. I think that there's a possibility that you could see Cristiano Ronaldo again. And the reason being because he actually did have a pretty good World Cup. But not only did he have that, this list screams two things at me. Success at the World Cup, success in the Champions League. That's why you see the Mo Salahs, the Sadio Manes in this list. So I think those are the reasons you see them. And I think that's where that's going to come from. That's why I think you might see Cristiano Ronaldo get this get the Ballon d'Or again this year. One other one that was an omission, and this was tweeted by Christian, who goes by Finally Aquino on Twitter, Ciro Immobile. And everyone was like, oh, what about Ciro Immobile? Scored 41 goals and 11 assists in 47 appearances last year and was not on this Ballon d'Or list. Mauro Icardi, who was the one that you mentioned, right? Not on this list as well. Lewandowski, like you said, not on this list as well. So, you know, some omissions, and it's amazing with the omissions when you have 30 players on the list that you would still have omissions. But I think they're all legitimate omissions that, you know, that we could talk about. Well, along with that, the Trophy Copa, which is the inaugural under-21 Ballon d'Or, came out. Usman Aouar, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Patrick Cutrone, Ritsu Doan, Gianluigi Donnarumma, Amadou Hiadara, Justin Kluivert, Kylian Mbappe, Christian Pulisic, and Rodrigo Goes are all on the quote-unquote baby Ballon d'Or list. One last question. Do you think we could see a double for Kylian Mbappe winning the baby Ballon d'Or and the Ballon d'Or?
No, I don't think he wins the actual big Ballon d'Or, but I think he's the I'm not even thinking. He will be the undisputed winner for that baby Ballon d'Or. I don't think there's anyone on that list that is even close to him of what he did this year in 2018.
No doubt about it. So, hey, we're just about running out of time. Do you want to give us the matches to look for this week now that we're in the window and the break?
Definitely. So it is obviously the international break. We do have a couple matches, though, that we feel you should be watching. We have the World Friendly, a World Friendly between Ukraine and Italy, Wednesday at 2 p.m. The return of Sebastian Giovinco in a couple of years. That's going to be interesting to see what happens if he can get back onto his form. UEFA Nations League between Poland and Portugal, Thursday at 2:45 p.m., which will not involve Cristiano Ronaldo. The United States takes on Colombia and Tampa, Thursday at 7:30 p.m. On Friday, we have Croatia-England in the UEFA Nations League as a World Cup rematch. On Saturday, we have Netherlands and Germany, always a big rivalry, at 2:45 p.m. in the Nations League. And to wrap it all up, we have the UEFA Nations League of Poland against Italy, Sunday at 2:45 p.m.
All right, man. So do you want to give us the trivia question?
Yes, absolutely. So at the moment, Messi has scored his, I believe, 26th goal against Valencia. That puts Valencia into his top five victims of most goals scored against a single team. Can you name the other four La Liga teams that Messi has scored the most goals against?
The first one I'm going to throw at you, because it's the Catalan derby, it's Espanyol.
No.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I thought for sure. That was the second name I wrote down. Bilbao is the first name I wrote down.
Bilbao is correct.
Okay. I put Real Madrid on the list.
Yep.
Yep. I had Atleti on the list, but I didn't like that one. That was the fourth name I wrote down, and I didn't like it because defensively, Atleti is so good.
Is that your final answer?
My final answer.
Atleti is the team that he scored the most goals against.
So I'm missing one, and it's not Espanyol.
Actually, sorry, second most. My second. Fault.
All right, so I'm missing the one that he scored the most against?
Yes. Oh my God. At the moment, this is the order at the moment. Bilbao with 24 goals. Valencia with 26, Real Madrid with 26, Atleti with 28, and one more he scored 31 goals against.
Celta Vigo.
No.
All right, then I'm gonna go Villarreal, and that's my last answer.
I'll give you a hint. They won a European title.
Sevilla?
31 goals against Sevilla.
Wow. That's amazing. So Sevilla, Atleti, Real Madrid, Bilbao, and Valencia.
Yep. Sevilla is Lionel Messi's favorite victim in La Liga. So if you're watching Barcelona-Sevilla, expect Messi to score in it.
I can't believe it's not Espanyol.
Think about it, though. 31 goals against a single team.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So, hey, without any further stuff on the docket, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Let me get this turned down. So, for episode 219 of Low Limit Football, thanks again to Mr. Nima Tavale for joining us tonight. Next week, we will return with more follow-up on the international break, follow-up news on Cristiano Ronaldo, and maybe even give you a little bit of league recap. So, for episode 219 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Usada.